The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Oh, boy. Welcome to a Monday, and it is a Monday. Ugh. In every sense of the word, I got to tell you, I'm off. I was off all weekend, and maybe it's still the after effects of my first Moderna dose of the vaccine, but I think I'm just blaming it. My arm is no longer sore. I'm brain foggy, but that's not unusual for me. I think it is the after effects of the shit show that happened this weekend and the general state of things in this country, which is, if I had to say, the state of the union today is, I'd say, depressing. And I've been holding off the depression, but boy, I'm feeling it. It's ready to, just a wash over me. So, I will hopefully keep my shit together today. I'm just in one of those moods. And I think it's because this nation is in a really horrible place. I thought once we were rid of Donald Trump, once we had evacuated him from the White House and able to have a good thorough cleansing and started the country back on a track towards normalcy, things would get better. But I'm afraid we're not there, and I don't know that we ever will be there again, at least not in my lifetime. I mean, I'm 61 years old. I don't want to be one of those really old people who, you know, they go visit from the Today Show when they're 98 years old. It's like, oh, are they going to make it to 100? I don't want to be that. Once I can no longer take care of myself, frankly, I don't want to be here any longer, and I'm not at that point yet. But I didn't watch much of CPAC this weekend. Of course, I couldn't avoid the clips and the coverage of it. And it's frankly depressing. And I got to tell you, it was during the show on Friday, Digby was here and we were talking. And while we were in conversation, you know me, I'm a multitasker, and I glanced over at the Twitter and somebody had posted an image, a thing about the stage at CPAC. And when I first saw it, I thought something doesn't look quite right, but I couldn't put my finger on it. Well, sure enough, if you're watching on any of the video feeds, you'll see the image of the stage and below it, something that's called an Odal rune. This is a Nordic symbol of some sort that was honestly co-opted by the Nazis, and it's something that they wore on their uniforms, on the SS uniforms. It was an insignia that SS officers wore. Now, you know, if you're thinking, okay, well, maybe it's just a coincidence. You know, some people thought that. Well, no. And in fact, let me put up another shot. In fact, this is the show shot from the day. You can see here is that same insignia on the collar of an SS soldier. It's there. Now, if you're going, yeah, but what does one have to do with the other? Well, good question. This, what I'm putting up on the screen now, is a photograph from 2017 in Charlottesville, Virginia. Yeah, you know, the Unite the Right March or whatever stupid name they gave it. This was where they marched at night holding torches and chanting, "Jews will not replace us." And there is that same symbol up on a banner or a flag. This is one of the new rights symbols. This is what they embrace. And if you think that it was a coincidence that the stage at CPAC was shaped in this figure, Well, then you have blinders on. So, I got to tell you, I posted something on Twitter this morning, and I have never had a tweet go, I guess this is what happens when a tweet goes viral. Already over 2,000 likes on it, almost 1,000 retweets on it. And I wrote, by the way, the idiots downplaying the Nazi symbolism on display at CPAC, their stage design, for example, are delusional. This photo, and I showed that one, was taken at the Charlottesville March where they chanted, Jews will not replace us. Just admit it. See, that's the thing. They do this stuff and then they claim, you know, they claim ignorance. Now, we know they're ignorant about a lot of things. Matt Schlapp, you know, he's that really obnoxious CPAC official. He's going that's just not, you know, that's an insult. You know, that kind of nonsense. By the way, the event was held at a Hyatt Regency. I guess, you know, attendance was down at CPAC this year, as it should be. But apparently, Hyatt Hotels is taking the wrath of the outraged people of the world who are going, what the fuck? What? Seriously? And, well, let me just read to you this from the Daily Beast. The headline reads, Hyatt calls CPAC stage that look like Nazi rune abhorrent. And the story goes like this. It sounds like Hyatt, it had never agreed to host this weekend's CPAC. You think? In an unusually honest corporate statement issued late Sunday, after Donald Trump took to the stage at the conference's finale, the hotel group said it was, quote, extremely disappointed by the disrespect many individuals involved in the event showed to our colleagues. Following reports that attendees became abusive when asked to wear masks and socially distance. The hotel group also called symbols of hate abhorrent after the design of the stage was compared to a Norse rune used by Nazis during World War II. Hyatt clarified that it had no involvement in the stage design, adding, quote, we take concern raised about the prospect of symbols of hate being included in the stage design at CPAC very seriously, as all such symbols are abhorrent and unequivocally counter to our values as a company. Matt Schlapp, American Conservative Union chair, dismissed the comparisons to the Nazi rune as, quote, outrageous and slanderous. Outrageous and slanderous, huh? Again, do you need to see anything else? That's what's outrageous and abhorrent. Yes, I can use those words too. It's just stunning. And you know, I had posted something on Friday after, you know, I realized this during the show. And, so, you know, a couple of people, why do you not include the passageways behind the CPAC boards in this hyperbolic assessment? All right. See, somebody is trying to both side or is me, Tyler Benjamin. Gee, shocker. It's somebody who allegedly joined Twitter. Oh, sorry. I got to put the picture back up in 2013 and has 5 followers. That's how you know this is a bot. This is not a real account or it's some, you know, bullshit account. When it says joined March 2013 and it has 5 followers, it tells me this is not a real person. Block. And those are the kind of people who are objecting to the post. But again, I don't think I've ever had a post have 2,000 likes on it. And this is going viral. But the thing that's got me depressed is the, you know, the pushback. The people who go, oh, like Matt Schlapp. Oh, come on now. You can't possibly claim. Yes. And the thing is, they're behaving, well, as you would expect them to. They don't need the dog whistle anymore. They've thrown the dog whistles out. They just put it out there. And when you call them at it, they say, what are you talking about? That's just a lovely square with 2 little wingy things coming off of it. What are you talking about? This is what I've been screaming about for years when I've talked about opposite world. You've heard it before. You'll hear it again.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
And it's gotten worse, like exponentially worse with each passing year. I think, you know, I first asked Boca, Brittany Summers, to come up with an opposite world sounder for me a long time ago. The original one, I don't even have the whole thing anymore. It started like this.
Welcome to Opposite World, where in is out and up is down.
And I edited it there because it used to say, brought to you by little Johnny Boner and his really big gavel. Because if you remember back many, many years ago when John Boehner ascended to Speaker of the House, he took the gavel from Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi uses a normal size gavel. Well, John Boehner had one, you know, specially made that was this huge gavel that he had her present him with. Because these are Republicans, that's what they do. So this dates back to then. And then Boca reworked it with the Twilight Zone imagery. But I've had this theory of opposite world for a long time. And as the, I'll put it all on them, as the Republicans have gotten more batshit crazy with each passing day, the opposite world tendencies also increased exponentially. And it's increased into projection. I mean, and we've talked about this before as well. They accuse the left of doing exactly what they do. When they talk about stealing the vote, that's because they steal votes. Do you know what's going on in Georgia today? If you're wondering one of the reasons why I'm depressed. Well, let me tell you. In Georgia, the Georgia State House passed HB 531. By a vote of 97 to 72. And you're wondering, what does Georgia House Bill 531 do? It would limit absentee drop boxes, shorten the window to request absentee ballot applications, severely limit big metropolitan Democratic counties from having the most popular weekend voting days, would shorten the runoff period, strip powers from the Secretary of State, and more. Basically, Georgia Republicans are upset that they lost the election. So while they still hold power in the state assembly, they're passing a law in Georgia to limit Georgia voters' rights. Yeah, it sucks, right? Now, the other reason, well, among many that I'm kind of depressed today, I had a guest booked to join us today. It's a really good guest, somebody I always love talking to. And I'm purposely not going to tell you who this person is because this person had to cancel. Because the subject we were going to talk about has blown up, and I'm not going to identify male or female, has blown up in their face. This person was talking publicly about, and I don't want to go into too much detail because I really don't want to get him or her into trouble. Not that he or she would be in trouble, but people around this person could be retaliated against. And actually, what it was about, you know, again, the theme of CPAC apparently was, you know, uncanceled America. Every other word from what I could glean was about the cancel culture. We're canceling them. We're not canceling anyone. We canceled Donald Trump by voting him out of office. But what the hell they're talking about, this cancel culture, is more made up diversions. Because they don't want you to realize that people are getting vaccinated, that, you know, and I've got problems with Joe Biden, too, and we'll get to those as well. Oh, yeah, we will. But they don't want you to look at the fact that Biden's approval rate is above 60% today. Donald Trump never got above 50, never made 50, never was in positive territory during his entire time in the White House. But so this person had to cancel their appearance on the show today because this subject has gotten so contentious. And the subject was how people are being shamed for adhering to COVID precautionary measures on college campuses. Students who take precautions are being shunned. And this person blamed it on higher education, not on the students themselves, not on that particular school, but on the culture, on the system that tells that it had the colleges and universities telling students to get back to as normal a life as possible. And then when they do, there are breakouts on campuses of COVID. But I don't even want to go there because, oh God, really? Sorry, Laffy just posted something, and Laffy's not posting a lot because she's suffering from tendonitis right now and her hands are really hurting. So she's not here again this week, but she just posted a 15-year-old boy has died hours after being shot at his school in Arkansas, allegedly by a fellow student, police say. The world's just crazy and we're not getting any better. I know I'm all over the place, but sorry, it's just that's where my mind is right now. I'm going in a million different directions and I'm trying, you know, to hold my shit together. Frankly, here's we will not have our guest today. So I'm deciding whether or not to play for you an interview that I recorded on Friday for Brad Friedman's show because I guest hosted the broadcast on Friday night as well. And this has to do with something that's happening tomorrow. But back, and I'll get to this, is all going to tie in somehow perfectly because, you know, because that's what I do, right? So I was talking about the cancel culture nonsense. Every other word out of their mouth is cancel culture. In fact, they put up a, they did a you know, they had their straw poll at CPAC. This is really classic. They had a the most important issues facing us today, according to the CPAC attendees. Election integrity is their number one. So the big lie, that's their big issue, right? 62% say election integrity is the most important issue facing us today. Yeah. Next up at 48%, constitutional rights. Immigration and the border wall is third at 35%. Reopening the economy, 32%. Second Amendment, oh yeah, 26%. That's their 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth most important issue. Number six, taxes, budget, and spending. Number seven, national security and foreign policy. And number eight, at 16%, dignity/pro-life. Nowhere on this chart even is COVID-19 and healthcare. It's stunning. I'm surprised cancel culture didn't come up in here because according to them, cancel culture, that's the most pressing issue facing us today. And there was a tweet from one of the Republican Senate nut jobs saying as much, that that's the most important thing we need to deal with, is we need to have hearings on the cancel culture. The only person that I'm hearing trying to cancel other people is Donald Trump. So he spoke last night. I said to David, all right, I got to turn it on. It's my job. I got to do it. I lasted maybe 5 minutes. So I didn't see when he did this because I had long turned it off. But of course, there's always clips. So Donald Trump gets up on the stage and he did an hour late. He shows up, by the way, because he didn't even leave his home, Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, until after he was already scheduled to be on the stage at CPAC. This is how much respect he has for these people. And they still bow down at his feet and they worship the painted plastic, gold painted idol that, please let it be a Sacha Baron Cohen scam on them again. Anyway, yes, what did the Bible say? Do not worship false gods before me or something like that. Except when it's a golden statue of Donald Trump looking ridiculous. It's got to be Borat. It's got to be. Anyway, I digress. Again, the one person I heard canceling other people, Trump.
The Democrats don't have grandstanders like Mitt Romney, Little Ben Sasse,
Richard
Burr, Bill Cassidy, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, hey. Pat Toomey.
He's naming everyone who voted to impeach him.
In the House, Tom Rice, South Carolina.
Unbelievable.
Adam Kinzinger.
All right, so you get the idea. He names every single senator who voted to impeach him and every single House member who voted, I don't even remember what they voted on now, for that he was guilty of spearheading this insurrection, whatever the fuck they voted on him. Anybody who was against Trump, he called them out by name from this stage, the first speech he's given since he left the White House on January 20th. This is what he used his time to do, to whine and bitch and moan and vow revenge on anybody who dared vote against him. Last time I checked, this was the United States of America, and we have that right, even within your party. It's just astounding. Then in the next, somewhere else, he went on to diss the Supreme Court and blame them for not having the courage to overturn a Democratic election. Of course, that's not the way he worded it, because he's still pushing the big lie. Let's be certain about this. Donald Trump lost. He is a loser. Loser. He lost the election by over 7 million votes. And by the same margin in the Electoral College vote as he allegedly beat Hillary Clinton 4 years earlier. Now, I disagreed with him being the president, and I disagree with the Electoral College. I think we need to do away with it. But if those are the rules, those are the rules. So he was the president for 4 years, as disgusting and despicable and distasteful and horrific as that was. We somehow, those of us who were still standing, managed to survive. But they're doing everything they can to say, oh, no, you didn't. You stole it all. I mean, hearing interviews with some of the people who were there, their refusal to accept reality is depressing. And they're about to make it worse. So, I think I will share with you this interview that I did with Ian Millhiser, who is a reporter, senior reporter at Vox.com. Not Fox, Vox with a V. And he specializes in the courts and the Supreme Court. And he wrote a story last week that caught my eye, and for good reason, because it tells about how Tuesday, the Supreme Court is going to hear two cases out of Arizona that could put the final nails in the coffin that they already prepared for the Voting Rights Act. You see, these people have no respect for our rights. The Voting Rights Act, which, you know, as recently as maybe a decade ago, the reauthorization passed virtually unanimously in the Senate. And now they're doing everything they can to overturn it. It is an assault on our democracy, much like the national anthem at CPAC was an assault on our senses. Did you hear this? I thought it was a joke, because I'd been seeing and again, I didn't see it live because I didn't watch it, but I've been seeing the videos posted and people commenting on the national anthem. And in fact, you know, I'm always hunting for good song parodies. I've seen a number of different musicians post their musical accompaniment to the brilliance that was the national anthem singer at CPAC. And just in case you missed it, I don't want to deprive you of the I would say comedy, but it just, it. Well, here, let me share it with you. And you judge. You decide. I'll play it. You decide. It's coming. Here we go.
Oh, say, well, can you see
what?
By the dawn's early light?
Okay, there was a clunker right at the beginning, but
what so proudly we hailed,
okay,
at the twilight's last
what?
Gleaming. Whose broad stripes
ouch!
And bright stars.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. I won't do it to you anymore. We need a palate cleanser. Hold on. Let me stop her, and let me just cue in the middle here. And Gaga, save us. Now that's how it's done, right? This is Gaga. She can sing. Okay, you see? That's how you do it. But obviously, the Republicans at CPAC couldn't get Lady Gaga, who, by the way, her dogs are back home and they're all good. And somebody found them tied up to a pole. She's going to give that person $500,000 because, you know, she's Gaga. Anyway, one more try.
The land,
yeah?
Of the free.
Oh. Okay, I'm sorry. I won't do that. I know, and I made it all better with Gaga, and then I screwed it up again. All right, I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry about that. I thought it would be a little bit of comic relief, but no, there was nothing funny about that. How about, you know, I got to look at the time. All right, if I'm going to play the Ian Millhiser interview, then I probably should do it now. I'll tell you what, before I get there, though, I'm upset about Joe Biden as well. I'm upset that the $15 an hour minimum wage was ruled a no-go by the Senate parliamentarian, that there's a move afoot by some members of the Senate saying it's just an advisory, it's not a rule, but the Biden administration is saying, nope, that's what the Senate parliamentarian ruled, we're sticking with it, we'll deal with that down the line. Really? Really? But they're going to the mat to fight for Neera Tanden to be confirmed? I don't understand. Priorities, people, priorities. But Joe Biden did do something good. He was talking about unions. Because in Arkansas, I guess an Amazon warehouse is going to unionize. And Joe Biden made the most impassioned defense of workers' rights to organize than I've heard from a living president probably in my lifetime. So let me share that with you before we get to what's going to happen tomorrow, okay? Take it away, Joe.
I've long said America wasn't built by Wall Street. It was built by the middle class, and unions built the middle class.
Yeah, they did.
Unions put power in the hands of workers. They level the playing field. They give you a stronger voice for your health, your safety, higher wages,
mm-hmm.
protections from racial discrimination and sexual harassment.
Mm-hmm.
Unions lift up workers, both union and non-union, and especially black and brown workers. I've made it clear when I was running that my administration's policy would be to support unions organizing and the right to collectively bargain. I'm keeping that promise. You should all remember, the National Labor Relations Act didn't just say that unions are allowed to exist.
Right.
It said that we should encourage unions.
We should encourage
so let me
unions.
Be really clear.
Yeah.
It's not up to me to decide whether anyone should join a union.
Right.
But let me be even more clear.
Okay.
It's not up to an employer to decide that either.
Yeah.
The choice to join a union is up to the workers, full stop.
Mm.
Full stop.
Nice.
Today and over the next few days and weeks, workers in Alabama and all across America are voting on whether to organize a union in their workplace.
Oh, it's Alabama, not this Arkansas, sorry.
Vitally important, a vitally important choice as America grapples with the deadly pandemic, the economic crisis, and the reckoning on race, what it reveals, the deep disparities that still exist in our country.
Yep.
And there should be no intimidation, no coercion, no threats, no anti-union propaganda. No supervisors who confront employees about their union preferences.
Good for him.
You know, any worker should have a free and fair choice to join a union.
Yeah.
The law guarantees that choice.
Yeah.
And it's your right, not that of an employer. It's your right. No employer can take that right away. So make your voice heard. God bless you all, and may God protect the workers and their families who are trying to figure out how to make it fairly.
Thank you, Joe Biden. So he's saying, go unions. I thought I should play that because that's something positive out of today. All right. So I'm just going to do this. So Friday, I taped this interview with Ian Millhiser for the broadcast because I was only going to use it on the broadcast. I didn't tape video because that show is audio only. So let's enjoy as much as we can, or be forewarned about what's happening tomorrow in the United States Supreme Court. Oh, boy. Ian Millhiser is a senior correspondent at Vox. That would be Vox with a V, where he focuses on the Supreme Court, the Constitution, and it says the decline of liberal democracy in the United States. Did you come up with that line?
I wrote my own bio, but unfortunately, that's been a whole lot of what I've been writing about this last year.
Definitely, unfortunately. I should mention that you have another book coming out, The Agenda, How a Republican Supreme Court is Reshaping America. That's set for a March 30th release. And just based on the title, yeah, it looks like that's where we are, and that's what we're going to talk about today, too.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have a whole chapter in there focused on voting rights and, you know, how this Supreme Court is going to make it harder and harder for Democrats to compete fairly in an electoral system that's already tilted towards Republicans.
Right. And you know, we knew this was coming because of the assault that the Trump administration carried out over 4 years on our judiciary. And we know what they did at the Supreme Court. And, you know, there are those of us who are idealistic that we're hoping that with the Democrats controlling Congress, that they'd use their newfound majority to fully reinstate the Voting Rights Act. But you wrote a piece that is at Vox.com. You put up on Tuesday. The headline reads, "The Supreme Court is about to hear two cases that could destroy what remains of the Voting Rights Act." And this is happening on Tuesday. So this is coming up. People need to know about this.
Yeah, there's an argument in these two cases on Tuesday. It's a Brnovich v. Democratic National Committee and Arizona Republican Party v. Democratic National Committee are the two cases. And these are really big. The Supreme Court. So first of all, the Voting Rights Act is the law which prevents racial voter discrimination. You know, it prevents the literacy test that we saw during Jim Crow. It prevents states from, you know, singling out black neighborhoods or Latino neighborhoods and trying to make it harder for people in those neighborhoods to vote. And the Supreme Court has been chipping away at this law for quite some time now. I mean, really, you know, since, I guess, 2013, I believe.
Right, with Shelby, right?
Was Shelby County.
Right.
Yeah, you know, that, and so they've been chipping away at it for a while, and these cases could really stick the dagger in the law. I mean, I don't think that the Supreme Court is going to say that the Voting Rights Act is unconstitutional, but what I think it is fairly likely to do is to water down the Voting Rights Act so much that it just becomes meaningless. You know, it becomes almost impossible to win a voting rights case. And then states will be free to engage in really widespread racist voter discrimination in order to prevent black people from voting, to prevent brown people from voting. And of course, really what's going on here is to prevent Democrats from voting.
Mm-hmm. Now, in 2013, you mentioned the Shelby County, it was Shelby County versus Holder. And the Supreme Court basically didn't totally do away with Section 5, but defanged it. And Section 5 was the preclearance process that states that had proven to violate, that they violated voters' rights in the past on racial, along racial lines, had to have preclearance for any changes they want to make to their electoral laws. Am I explaining that even closely correctly?
Yeah, no, that's right. So, broadly speaking, the Voting Rights Act does three things.
Okay.
So the first thing that you did, like you mentioned, is preclearance. And what preclearance means is that states that had a long history of racist voter discrimination, and that's, you know, that's a lot of southern states, but it also, I mean, Arizona, because of how it had treated voters of color in Arizona, like they were implicated. So there was a list of states and jurisdictions where, because they had a history of racist discrimination, any new voting rule in those states had to be, pre-clearing is the term, you know, it had to be approved by officials in D.C.
Right, the Justice Department, right?
The idea was that the racist law wouldn't go into effect until someone had looked at it to make sure that it wasn't racist. So that's the first prong. The second prong is called the intent test. And that just means that a state can't pass a law, or like a local legislature can't pass a law which, with the intent of discriminating on the basis of race in elections. So, you know, if, you know, like North Carolina, for example, they passed a law a few years ago, where they looked at racial data for how voters of different races tended to vote, and basically wrote the law with the intent of making it harder for black people to vote. Mm. And so that would violate the intent test, because their intention was to discriminate against black people. The problem with the intent test is there was a case called Abbott v. Perez a few years ago, which made it so hard to prove racist intent that it's now virtually impossible. And then the third prong of the Voting Rights Act is called the results test. And the results test means that if there's a law that results in voters of color having less opportunity to vote, even if there wasn't necessarily racist intent, that law is also invalid. And that's what these two cases in front of the Supreme Court are about. And I worry that they're going to do the same thing to the results test that they did to those other two prongs, preclearance and the intent test. They won't necessarily strike them down. They'll just weaken them to such a point. They'll just weaken it to such a point that it doesn't mean anything.
Right. And the thing is, it's already so watered down. I mean, we look at what happened since November, right? The 2020 election had the biggest turnout in history. It was also, despite what Trump has tried to sell his followers, it's also been the most secure election we've had in years. And I say it's because so many of us voted on paper ballots through the mail. It took away the electronic component that can often get screwed up. But now, state governments, Republican-run state governments across the country, have come up with a record number of laws determined to roll that back. Like, I live in Florida. I have voted by mail for 10 years now. It's always been simple. It's great. It works great. Now they're saying, well, we're going to put a new law into effect that says even if you voted by mail before, you have to re-register to vote by mail for each election. These are voter suppression tactics. And 33 states have already introduced, pre-filed, or carried over 165 new bills this year.
It's really important context. I mean, what we're seeing right now in a lot of states, I mean, Georgia has a particularly egregious bill, Arizona mm-hmm. has a particularly egregious bill, and these were the two closest states in the last election.
Right.
They want to make it harder to vote by mail. There's some talk about cutting Sunday voting because African-American churches frequently have get out the vote drives on the Sunday before election day.
Right. Souls to the polls.
There's a lot
right?
of things like that that are just efforts to make it harder to vote, and often efforts specifically to make it harder for voters of color to vote. And while these bills, and I mean, the reason I'm being sort of vague about these bills is mm-hmm. you don't know what the final bills are going to say.
Right.
This is still in an early stage. But like, while these bills are advancing through state legislatures, the Supreme Court is taking away the safeguards against voter suppression. And so that's just going to cause these legislators to be, much more aggressive in the laws that they pass, because they're soon going to have more freedom to engage in vote suppression than they've had since the Jim Crow era.
Wow. And you look at how close they came to stealing this election. And I always talk about, I reference Opposite World. And it's so evident with today's Republican Party, because they do they're masters at projection. So they accuse the left of doing what they themselves do. So when they say stop the steal, they're the ones who were trying to steal it, and they came so close. And for instance, these new laws, these new voter suppression laws in Georgia, let's just use Georgia as an example, never would have been possible if Section 5 wasn't gutted in 2013. And now they're just doubling down on that to make it, I guess, to give state legislatures the ability to stop whoever they don't want to vote from voting.
Right. Now, I do want to say something to give people hope.
Okay.
Like, I don't
Please.
Think that the response to this is despair.
Okay.
Like, I don't think that the response to this is that the Supreme Court's just going to rig all of our elections and, like, we're going to be stuck with Donald Trump as president for life.
I hope not.
Like, the way that these, like, most Republican voter suppression laws have worked in recent years is the goal isn't, like, the way that Stacey Abrams put it, is that they try to make vote suppression look like user error. Mm-hmm. So, like, mm-hmm. If you make a minor error when you're filling out your absentee ballot, they'll toss it out. If you don't have the right ID, they'll take away your right to vote. Mm-hmm. One of the issue in these Arizona cases that are being heard next week is if you go to the wrong precinct. Like, in many states, if you go to the wrong place to cast your vote, they'll still let you vote for all the candidates that, like, are statewide and national candidates that everyone in the state gets to vote for. It's just like the local candidates that are only in that precinct that you don't get to vote for.
Right.
In Arizona, if you show up at the wrong precinct, you're done. Like, your vote doesn't count, and, like, your vote for president doesn't count, even though, it's not like there's different presidential candidates in different parts of the state. So, like, the idea isn't necessarily to make it impossible to vote. The idea is to make it just difficult enough that in a close election, and especially with Republicans already having all the advantages they have from the Electoral College and from Senate malapportionment, that in a close election, it puts enough of a thumb on the scale that the Republican wins. And so the trick is, you just got to know what how they're trying to take your vote away and not fall for it. If they require you to get some stupid ID that you don't need, you can still get the stupid ID that you don't need. If they require you to fill out the form in a particular way and they'll toss out your ballot if you do it in blue ink instead of black ink, make sure you have a blue pen.
Right.
Like, you can.
But
beat
you know that, and I know that because we pay attention. But I hate to say, the vast majority of the American public does not. And that's the problem.
Right.
They're counting on you, people not paying attention and not knowing these things.
Right. And I mean, to some extent, that's where I come in, because I'm a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
It's my job to inform people of what's going on. It's also, I think, the job of the parties,
mm-hmm.
and in this case, particularly the Democratic Party, because
yeah.
they're the party that, is being victimized by these laws. I mean, it is, you know, I don't want to say that this isn't unfair. Like, the Democratic Party is going to have to spend money that it shouldn't have to spend, and it's going to have to put a lot of resources into voter education. And that means that Republicans have an unfair advantage. Like, that's the purpose of these laws, to give Republicans an unfair advantage. But is an advantage that can be overcome. It was overcome in 2020. And, you know, the issue is that the people who, you know, don't want these tactics to work have to care enough about making sure that they don't work, that they don't work.
Right. Hey, Ian Millhauser, is it possible that we can prevent Stacey Abrams from running for governor in Georgia, and that Joe Biden would create a new cabinet level position for her as election educator or something like that? Because she's got a record of success. People listen, and look what she did in Georgia. We need somebody like that who can talk to the American people and say, here's what you need to do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm never going to tell Stacey Abrams
not to run for governor, right?
I mean, if she wants to run for governor,
go for it. Yeah.
She should go for it.
I hear you.
Yeah. But I will say that, I mean, there's lots of stuff that could be done, assuming we have a functioning Congress.
Yeah.
And
uh-huh.
Unfortunately, we only have a semi-functioning Congress right now because of the filibuster. You know, you create a cabinet level position to protect voting rights. You could strengthen the Voting Rights Act. You could ban gerrymandering, which is, you know, something we haven't gotten into, but is another huge way that, you know, people try to put a thumb on the scale in elections.
Mm-hmm.
You could do a whole lot of stuff. You could change the makeup of the Supreme Court.
Yes.
If you have the votes in Congress to do it. But, I mean, Senator Manchin, Senator Sinema have both been very clear that they don't want to get rid of the filibuster. I hope they change their mind. But, you know, if I can, at the risk of quoting Donald Rumsfeld, you know, you go to war with the senators.
The Congress you have. I hear you.
And I mean, until someone finds a way to change Manchin and Sinema's mind about the filibuster, I don't think federal legislation is in the picture.
Right.
And that doesn't mean that American democracy is doomed, but it does mean that for probably the next 2 years, we have to find a way to save American democracy that doesn't involve the United States Senate.
Right. So, Ian, you wrote this piece. It's up at Vox. I'll link to it from the blog today at NicoleSandler.com, along with where I post the podcast, about the Supreme Court is about to hear two cases that could destroy what remains of the Voting Rights Act. That's happening on Tuesday. But then you just put up your latest piece. Is related, but it's different. The headline on this one is, a single Trump judge is already sabotaging Biden's efforts to slow deportations. And this one judge it can really block Biden from doing a whole lot of things. And there's a whole lot of those kind of judges that Donald Trump put on the bench that have lifetime appointments now.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the biggest political stories of the last 3 or 4 years is Republicans have largely abandoned their legislative agenda.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, 4 years ago, you had Paul Ryan running around. There was the Ryan budget. And like the Ryan budget, I mean, it was one of the most ambitious legislative agendas I have ever seen from a political party.
Right.
They wanted to cut Medicaid funding in half.
Ugh.
They wanted to eliminate the Affordable Care Act. They wanted to turn Medicare into a voucher program.
Yep.
They wanted to gut food stamps. And I mean, whatever you want to say about that agenda, it was ambitious. Like, you know, no president since Lyndon Johnson had proposed such a radical overhaul of the obligation that our society owes to the people in it.
Right.
And they just abandoned that. I mean, they didn't campaign on that in 2020. You know, the Republican Party platform in 2020 was just, we support Donald Trump.
Yeah, it was just they used the 2016 platform and just crossed out the date and said, this is our platform this year, too.
Right. And the reason why isn't because they don't have policy ambitions. It's because they don't need the legislature anymore because they control the judiciary.
Right.
And they think that they can get the goal, their policy enacted through the judiciary. I mean, this is what my book, The Agenda, is about, if I can plug it for a second. You know, they aren't pushing a legislative agenda anymore because they control the one unelected branch of government. And so this piece that I wrote that went up, I believe, yesterday, mm-hmm. was about how this one Trump judge in Texas had stopped Biden's, it wasn't even a ban, it was a pause. It was a 100-day pause,
right.
on deportation.
Right.
The judge halted it. He has no legal basis whatsoever to do so. But the problem is that his order is going to appeal to the Fifth Circuit, which has a ton of Trump appointees on it. It's one of the most conservative courts in the country. God. And then it's appeal from the Fifth Circuit to the Supreme Court, which has six Republicans on it. So, you know, who cares if you've got the law on your side if you have the vote?
Right.
And so that is what I mean, and like Biden may have to make some very frightening choices about what to do about a rogue judiciary. Because you have a lot of judges who, you know, aren't just very, very conservative, but they have become the vehicles for the Republican Party's entire policy agenda.
Wow. Wow. And yeah, and we're stuck with it. I mean, basically, now judges can be impeached, can't they? But there's no way we're going to go around impeaching all these hundreds of judges that Trump appointed.
Yeah, and I mean, even if I'm not sure if impeachment is the solution, even if I did think it was, like, you know, Donald Trump instigated an attack on the Capitol.
Yes.
Like there were senators, like members of that jury, who could have been lynched because of Donald Trump. And after that, there were only 57 votes to convict him.
Right.
Like, you know, 43 Republicans were like, yeah, I almost died,
but
I'm still not going to vote against you.
It makes no sense. It's just, it's inconceivable. But here we are.
It absolutely makes no sense. But I guess what my point is that if they're not going to vote to remove or to disqualify the guy who almost got them killed, they sure aren't going to vote to remove someone who's just a bad judge.
Exactly. No, it's amazing. Just watching the turnaround from the night of January 6th, when you saw Lindsey Graham, who I think was a little tipsy at that point, saying, I'm done. I'm out. I was with him, but I can't do this anymore. It's done. To like the next day, he turns around and flies down to see him at Mar-a-Lago. And Kevin McCarthy, one day he's like, he was complicit. This is a direct result of the things he said. And then he turns around and again is at Mar-a-Lago. There's something very sick going on here and frightening, and we don't have a fix for it legislatively or judicially. So I appreciate you trying to be optimistic here, but I'm kind of freaked out about where we are, even though I'm in a much better place now than I was before January 20th.
Yeah. I mean, what I've heard, like, I mean, a lot of political scientists that I've listened to have said that frequently you see a party starts to change its stripes if it loses three presidential races in a row.
Okay.
So the Republican Party, you know, really did moderate after Roosevelt and then Truman were in office for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the Democratic Party became pretty conservative after Ronald Reagan served two terms and then passed it off to George H.W. Bush.
Yep.
So three is what I am told is the magic number. And so if 12 years from now, you and I are chatting and, you know, President Kamala Harris is running for reelection, thinking about her reelection race after serving two successful terms as vice president, like, we could have a very different Republican Party. Under those circumstances, the Republican Party could become a normal center-right party, you know, something more like what it was in, say, you know, 1991. And, like, that would be a very good thing for the country. Like, I don't want to leave people with despair thinking that nothing's going to be done, but to to win, for Democrats to win three elections in a row, they're going to have to do it on an uneven playing field. And right. on a playing field, the Supreme Court is going to make even more uneven.
Yeah, we got an uphill climb here, but we've had that for a while. Look, 81 million people came out and voted for Joe Biden, which is remarkable, especially when you consider 74 million voted for Donald Trump. And before this election, that 74 million is more than ever voted for any other presidential candidate now, except for Joe Biden in 2020. The numbers are astounding. So people are plugged in. I hope the Democrats, the people who see what danger lurks on the right, realize this and see what's at stake here. And I hope they pay attention to people like you, Ian Millhiser, who's writing such great stuff. You're putting up red flags. You're putting up flares, warnings that I hope they're paying attention to.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, the only thing that I mean, you know, there are lawyers who can do things. There are judges who can do. But I mean, even if you're just listening to this, like we are not yet at the point where our elections are rigged. You know, and I mean, there's a whole literature on like, Trump tried to consolidate authoritarian power and he failed.
Yes.
And that doesn't mean that we're out of the woods yet. But it does mean that we're still at the point in the United States where authoritarianism can be stopped with elections.
Right.
And, like, that's just, I mean, like, we are in emergency mode right now, but we are in emergency mode when there is a possible lawful constitutional solution. And so, you know, if you don't want an authoritarian consolidation of power in the United States, you know, we're all going to have to be out here busting our asses and warning people about it and making sure that everyone gets to the polls and making sure that everyone who can vote does until the crisis passes.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I have to hold out hope that some of these judges, while they may have been Republicans, not all Republicans are evil, have their legacy to think of, and they don't want to be defined by Donald Trump. And therefore, we saw two rulings last week from the Supreme Court. One made him turn over all his tax records. He wasn't expecting that, obviously, because he thought his, and I'm doing air quotes, you can't see, his justices would do for him what he did for them. And then they also ruled that the Pennsylvania, the last challenge to the Electoral College votes from Pennsylvania, they threw out that too. So maybe their better angels will take over and they'll do the right thing, because after all, they are judges first, I hope.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've been covering the Supreme Court for a long time.
Yeah.
And, like, the Supreme Court tends to operate over, like, decades-long arcs rather than over the course of, like, month-long arcs.
Right.
And so what I mean by that is, like this scary case that I started off talking about that's probably going to gut the Voting Rights
Act.
Much of the framework for that was laid in the 1980s. Like Chief Justice Roberts, this is one reason I'm so pessimistic about these cases,
mm-hmm.
is Chief Justice Roberts in 1982 was a young Justice Department lawyer in the Reagan Justice Department who was the point person within the Reagan administration trying to convince President Reagan to veto the bill that created the Voting Rights Act's results test.
Mm-hmm.
And Reagan, to his credit, didn't listen to John Roberts. Reagan, to his credit, signed that bill. But, like, that was four decades ago.
Wow.
That John Roberts was thinking through these arguments. Or, okay, how can we prevent this safeguard against racial voter discrimination from existing? And after, you know, almost four decades, you know, 39 years, it looks like he's probably going to get his way. There are, you know, part of the reason, a big reason why I think a lot of Trump's arguments failed is because Trump hadn't done the work, you know, that he didn't have three decades of law professors writing articles coming up with an intellectual framework for why he shouldn't get, you know, why people shouldn't be able to see his tax returns. There's a lot of stuff that I think the courts aren't going to do just because people haven't done the work yet. But, you know, the thing to keep in mind is that the Federalist Society is doing the work right now. Mm-hmm. And if you let the courts continue to be controlled by these kinds of judges for too long, then eventually, you know, they'll have done their work and, you know, we'll see where that takes us.
There are so many variables out there. We can just do what we can do. And for you and me, I guess that's inform people and make sure they stay on top of it, because knowledge is power. And knowing what they're trying to do to keep many of us from voting is the first step in not letting them keep us from voting, if that makes sense. Ian Millhiser, thank you so much. I've kept you longer than I said I would. Find Ian on Twitter at iMillhiser and at Vox.com for his great work. And we'll look out for the new book coming in March. Thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. And you, thank you for listening, everyone. We're done for today. I'll be back tomorrow, hopefully in a better mood. Thanks for listening. Take care. Good luck, Supreme Court. Good luck to us. Bye.